by the National Director of Public Prosecution to appear in court on Thursday on allegations of bribery. I have cooperated in the process and I have yet. And I will extend welcome to the charges that we brought. And in line with the Constitution and the rule of law, I have given the right to submit to the process that was objected to. And I'm looking forward and assure the nation that I will go to the court and prove my innocence. Whatever outcomes of the court will be binding to me and my conscience. I think those will be the welcoming of my decision. Can I seek apologies?
Thank you. I want to respond to your opening remarks, and I want to remind this House that it was the Democratic Alliance as well who were strongly appealed for you not to be elected as the chairperson. Safe to say that we believe in the rule of law, and the law must go its course, and thank you for taking us in your confidence in making this announcement on what has transpired recently. I don't think it's a good thing for Home Affairs. I don't think it's a good thing for this portfolio. And we also take note as the opposition of the announcement by the ANC itself that defended you in saying that they will not act. It is for the party and their right to do so. But we take note, and we want to wish you well so that we can hear the truth in the serious matter that is at hand.
No, thanks, Chair. We take note of the development that has been made since last week around your matter. We confined on the centrality of the Constitution of the Republic, that you remain innocent until proven otherwise. We agree with your party that has pronounced on the status of a member. We remain confident on your leadership in the committee. We remain conscious on the issues that are related to the process. We hope that by yourself and your party accepting the process of the rule of law, we are confident that it's an acceptable of a disciplined member of the party you are coming from. And we hope that on your endeavor to subscribe to the Constitution and the matter. We continue with the work under the portfolio committee of Home Affairs. And I think this matter, Chair, will now henceforth be directed to the office of the ANC and the Chief Whip of the Major. But we hope that you, as of your pronouncement on the remarks, you will not enter into any other space on the same matter. We want to encourage you to prepare this issue to the party and the office of the chief. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can you take apologies?
Good morning. I do have one apology from Mr. Jang, who's an alternate member, and also from the Minister of Home Affairs, and also I understand the PM might be leaving during the course of the meeting to attend to other matters.
Thank you. Any further apologies? No further apologies. We are on item number 3. Before the committee members, the issue of
belongs to the Department of Home Affairs. I think we can take the presentation. Deputy Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We have been called to give a briefing by the Department on strategies to resolve long queues at home affairs offices. We have prepared a presentation which is very detailed that deals with both aspects of our queues, in a sense from within the branch as well as the immigration in the part that deals with the refugees, where we have also the issue of queues. I must firstly, before the DJ takes us through the presentation, indicate that for the current annual performance plan, we have made the war on queues a ministerial priority, which means we take that issue very seriously. We have in the past couple of months continued with our work, doing surprise visits in various home affairs offices, with the intention of sending a very serious message that we take the service that we offer our people very seriously. We are in the process of opening more health facilities in terms of home affairs offices. I've been myself involved in the opening of about two in the past couple of months. We are hopeful that opening those facilities will really deal with the backlog that we find that results in queues with regards to issuing of birth certificates as well as death certificates, which can be issued in those centers. They are low demanding on staff, yet they are very efficient, and their efficiency will make us reduce more queues in various offices. We are looking into the issue of the banking institutions. In order for us to grow our footprint without incurring a lot of expenses, there are some offices that have been opened. The recent one that was opened by the DG here in Cape Town, which will really also help us resolve the issue of queues, because it means we are expanding our footprint but at a less cost to the department. We will also present strategies that we are implementing when we deal with the issue of queues as a result of refugee centers. In our refugee centers, we have increased our live capture offices to 193. We do conduct special projects, and I think I would want this committee to also take note on some of the selfless work that is being done by our officials. Some of our young or youth officials in the department volunteer and commit weekends to come and assist the learners. That is one of the projects that I've seen myself, where young people of the department will come together and open on a Saturday and open up on a Sunday, and specifically address concerns that are faced with our learners. So there is some work that is being done, despite the challenges that we suffer, that you are aware of, that we have presented around the issue of staffing capacity and the cap of the 3.3 billion, which means we are really struggling with regards to staff. But I will allow, having made that background, I will allow the DG to take us through the detailed presentation on the challenges that we are facing, the solutions that we are putting in place, as well as the impact that it's making on the war on queues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and Members of the Media. Chair, my presentation is just going to deal with two aspects relating to the background program statement and some of the intervention strategies we've made, and some of the progress around the issue of the long queues, and some of the positive feedback we have received from members of the public. Chair, at the beginning of this presentation, I just want to outline that the first project for us is to present some of the strategies to resolve long queues at our offices, particularly the civil service offices, to the specific and the reception offices. Chair, we we have presented in cabinet what we call a repositioning program of the department, where we intend to reposition the department in a manner in which it can be a department that can operate for long hours and 7 days a week. The third agenda that we are pursuing, and this that intervention is one of the interventions of the other that will lead to some of the resolution of the problems at hand. Now, I just want to outline that we, in 2008, at the beginning of the year, we had an unprecedented long queues in our offices, which led to the department being inundated with calls from frustrated and devastated members of the public on the time spent in some of our offices across the country due to long queues. These calls prompted and necessitated the minister to pay special attention and take a decision to visit these offices unannounced in order to observe at a personal level and establish the nature of the situation in these offices. I must say that prior to the modernization of our offices in 2013, we had a situation where people would not present themselves in offices but would send applications in bulk, whether it's for passports or other documents through agents to drop in the offices. But post that, when we modernized the system, we needed people to appear in person. Obviously, that received very well, and we obviously increased the number of offices as quickly as possible, but obviously the limitation that the Deputy Minister has highlighted, which are financial in nature, has often been prohibited. So, in 2018, then the Minister identified offices which in the main were named as offices that had high volumes, which these were Alexandra office in Gauteng, the Soweto office, the Peter Maritzburg office in KwaZulu-Natal, and Ungain office in East London. The vision there was to establish what we call an effective model which would serve as a benchmark to roll out in other offices. So what we did with these offices, we augmented all the equipment, we increased the waiting area, particularly in Alexandra. We opened a new waiting area inside the office in order for us to be able to increase the capacity for people to wait in gaining. We separated areas for bed, merit, and death, and passport applications, collections, and separate. The floor space in Ngeni was quite good enough for us to be able to do that. And the same way was done, obviously, for East London and Soweto. Then with that particular model, we then took it into other offices in order to try and augment. Obviously, there are some limitations in those offices, in other offices, which I'll talk about in the later slides. So on the 10th of April, then last year, the Minister directed the Department to conduct an assessment in order to develop intervention strategies that will deal with the challenges of long queues and improve service delivery. And then after that, the Minister launched what we now know as the War on Queues campaign, which formed part of our departmental annual operational plan. I now wish to turn to the refugee reception offices, which also have seen a number of queues, particularly the Desmond Tutu refugee reception office in Marabastak, Pretoria. The department has 5 of those refugee reception offices throughout the country, and in the past we have experienced volume leading obviously long queues. These refugee reception offices are set in Desmond Tutu in Marabastak, in Mosina refugee reception office in Mosina, the Cape Town reception office, and then Port Elizabeth and Durban. So apart from Desmond Tutu and Mosina office, the department is functioning at a reduced capacity with direct impact on the ability of the offices to attend to all clients for services. We have highlighted the number of officials that we have at the office, with the Desmond Tutu having the lion's share of the officials, because this is where the nucleus and the hub of future reception office, the 141 office. We have merged this office with, we had another which we used to call a Tiro office, which was opened in Swale Investment. So we merged the Desmond Tutu with that one. The Swale capacity is quite bigger there because also of the volumes. In Mosina, we're operating with about 40 officials, in Devon with about 30, in PE with 18 officials, and in Cape Town with 31 officials. The nature of services in the asylum management regime is diverse, with the longest line of interaction being for processing new applicants, for example, is registering, the interviewing and the adjudication of the newcomer, which it can take up to 1.5 hours. The shortest interaction is for extension of Section 22 permit, which is estimated as 5 minutes. The refugee reception officers predominantly provide certain services that require the client interaction with staff. From January to September 2019, we already had about 18,924 applicants for asylum with newcomers. We have interviewed and adjudicated about 15,493 of those. We have had the extension of Section 22 permits. We have ID applications for refugees that have been applied for, which was about 6,125, which issued about 5,999, and also the travel documents that were applied for in this particular office. With Section 22 permits, I'll explain why also it's quicker to do those because of the introduction of what we call an automated booking terminal. So in terms of the problem statement, we're saying that the long and journey queues emanating from high flight volumes were caused by what we call unpredictable walk-ins. Chairperson, when we open our doors in any office, we cannot tell you how many people we expect a day. Because our people do not book for their appointments, because the nature in which the department is overnight in the front office is that if you were to introduce a booking system, it means someone must come, make a booking, or have an online terminal to book an appointment, and then if a person has no access to those workers, will be disadvantaging the poor. So therefore, the issue of the walk-ins that are unpredictable is part of the challenge that we currently have. We also had a discontinuation of the Saturday working hours. In the past, we had introduced the Saturday working shift, which was working very well for us because we were able to service particularly those who are not able to come during the week, whether it's school children, whether it's blue-collar workers who contact in their workplaces are not flexible enough, but if they are not there during the week, they are losing income. We also had a challenge with the inadequate front office space. We continue to do that. I will not dwell much on the issue of unstable systems, because it's one of the challenges that we have reported time and again in this community. Just this morning, the Cape region had experienced a downtime of 45 minutes because there was a speech that shipped a speaker, so we received messages. So we monitor, obviously, on a regular basis that the system had shipped. So for the 45 minutes, people had to wait so that they can reboot that system as part of the day-to-day management of the system. We also had a challenge around inefficient workflow process and the uncoordinated communication strategy that lead to unsatisfied clients. And we highlighted the following factors which exacerbated the problem, which is inability to implement an appointment system, because we tried to look at options. Can we do this thing? How can we do it? Who are we going to disadvantage? And it was clear that the poor are going to suffer a lot if we actually implemented an appointment system, because in some instances it could be a person or so to the office twice, come and make a booking, and then go back and come back when they want to do that particular service. Second one was around the lack of load management, which resulted in inefficient control of queues. Again, because of limitation, one, every staff behind the desk, rather than trying to manage the queues because of the capacity challenges. In Getsemane, for an example, we've entered into an MOU with the municipality where they give us some of the intent that they employ the municipality, sign an agreement with them. So in the office, for example, we find those officials that I think need to be tested in those offices. They help us to manage the flow in order for us to direct the clients correctly. And that has been working very well. So obviously, we are looking at ensuring that we enter into partnerships with other stakeholders. We've just signed an agreement also with Caltrain, where we are going to be also getting some officials who are going to be distributing certain offices to have in that regard. We also have a problem with the concurrent running of the manual and automated systems in offices. Basically, where we have automated smart cards and passports, but we have not automated the bank merit system yet. So you are running two systems, the legacy and the new system. distribution of office is not based on demographics. That method continues to be developed, but what we did this year, we commissioned what we call an access model study. So that work has been done by ourselves in the CSIR. So that will help us when we actually expand the footprint to say that we do have a scientific method in which we are able to make a determination that this particular event is with office, you know, because of the particular, that we've done it before. But obviously, the change in population dynamics, you would then expect that the study must be redone in order to give you the real sense of where you need to locate your offices. We also had a lot of misinformation last year, where through social media, where people were saying that the Green ID book is going to continue, people must rush to our offices. And there was a huge rush to the Department of Home Affairs because of the misinformation, which obviously, you know, has a negative impact on us if people could be students. And then we have protected offices with poor signage, you know, that we need to do, whether it's the location of an office or whether someone in their house, we don't know which queue they join, find out the person joining the queue. That is really not the wrong queue where there's application instead of going to any queue for collection. So I think this is one of the areas which we needed to deal with. In terms of the Antarctica management offices and the official reception offices, the clients in those areas, they normally arrive very early in the office prior to the opening of the office, so it creates huge queues outside. The premises which the Cape Town official reception office, for example, is operating from is not suitable to serve a large number of clients, so therefore it is not usually overcome. And it's spill over to the street and obviously create an eyesore. Also, the initial layout at Devon and Cape Town Refugee Reception Offices, it hampers the workflow process. With Devon, we're going to be revamping it at the beginning of next year to ensure that we take into consideration all those challenges. So, also the following factors, they also expanded the problem. The lack of interpretation services. Chairperson, when a person comes to the Department of Home Affairs at the Antarctica Refugee Reception Office, in terms of the law, they must be interviewed in the language that they understand. So we attract other asylum seekers from different parts of the world. Someone who comes speaking Yoruba but a different dialect. So we have to employ a number of people who speak Swahili, who speak Yoruba, who speak Portuguese, Spanish, French, you know, in order for us to ensure that when a person is being interviewed, they cannot lay the claim that actually they were interviewed in English, which is a language that they do not understand. That on its own is a huge strain to the department. In the past, we used to locate those individuals in the refugee reception offices. But also there was an issue relating to corruption and collusion between the interpreters themselves and the people that are being interviewed, and misleading the officials who have future status determination officers because they are not understand what they are talking about. What we then did is that we moved the interpretation services to head office. We created what we call a contact center where the future reception office will dial into that center to get the person who speaks that particular language. Again, we don't have hundreds of those particular individuals, because you find that we have one person who speaks Yoruba, one person, or five persons who speak Spanish, you know, so the numbers, you know, they vary. So therefore, people must wait in the queue for us to be able to get this interview. So it's a very complex operation when you look at it, because it also requires huge financial injection in order for us to be able to have those particular services. So we divide these interpretation services on a day, for example, on a Thursday, we'll say it's West African. On a Monday, it's this particular region, in order for us to be able to ensure that we don't have those interpreters idling, you know, waiting for those folks on a daily basis. Again, the issue of letting flow marshals and the refugee reception offices, the shortage of staff, and that shows you, how many people we have, and again, in relation to the distribution of those offices. We are closed, by the way, the PE office, when we reopen it. In the Cape Town, also we are working on that, ensuring that we get a much better facility to process asylum seekers. Now, in my earlier problem statement, I raised the issue of unpredictable walk-ins, but the question is how do we then deal with it? On a regular basis, you might receive complaints that certain offices cutting the queues, you know, because managers do an assessment to say, in reality, you know, if you still have at 3 o'clock, you still have 100 people in the queue, there's no way that you can service them in the hour that is left before you close the office. So what we're looking at is to develop what we call a system to issue tickets for overflow clients so that they can know that, you know, the following day that they're set, you know, in line to the service. We also want to create what the specific counters for clients who apply on e-home affairs. Because currently we created the e-home affairs platform where you can book an appointment. But that appointment is just confined to the sites of the bank that we are doing a pilot with. It's not actually for our front offices, but as I said, it's quite impossible for us to do an appointment system in our offices. But we want to encourage the utilization of the e-home affairs platform to say in a particular office, you then create a counter that will specifically just deal with those people who have already done their application online. All they need is just to catch up our metrics and leave the office, because it's much quicker, you know, in order to do that. So that's an option we are looking at. We're also looking at developing a smartphone app for the issue of passports and ID smart cards. In this regard, what we're thinking would work for us is that we should allow clients to be able to apply for a reissue of the document without them coming to enrollment. Because this is a guide, we will keep the same picture that they took when they did their first enrollment, and then they will just order their document. Always we have to find a mechanism to authenticate that the person who applied for this reissue is the same person who is on the system. So there is a mechanism that we are currently working on. If all goes according to plan, we should have this by early next year. And this will also help for citizens, South Africans who are living abroad, who are wanting to apply for their passports, because they suffer the most, because the process in the mission abroad is still manual and not automated. We will resume the negotiations in the bargaining chamber with the unions on the discontinuation of our working hours. The minister has been in touch with society around that particular discussion, and also myself, I've had a conversation with the Public Service Association to say we need to really start this particular conversation, because we believe that the Department of Home Affairs is not a department that must operate Monday to Friday, but it must be Monday to Monday because of the nature of the service that we provide. The issue relating to inadequate leadership is one of the issues that we're facing. We continue to conduct training, you know, on operations management, service quality management, and client evaluation. We also created a support system for managers through, amongst other social media, which has worked very well, by the way. Because as I was saying this morning, when the system is down, we are able to get live information from the ground, what's happening in each and every office. In dealing with that. Also, we've linked all our provincial offices with video conferencing facilities, so we're able to call all managers to sit through a video conference and address them, you know, much more quicker. We also think that designing purpose-built office facilities for Home Affairs will resolve the problem, because we are all the department that, you know, create an ISO when in our service point. I mean, hospitals want to absorb people because they operate 24 hours. Inside, you know, the police are working 24 hours. So ours, because we're working in the limited hours, you know, during the day. So therefore, when people are in services, the mere fact that they have to stand outside while waiting for us to open the office, that's what is a huge challenge which we need to resolve. And obviously, it is ideal for us to have longer hours where it's possible. I think I will not address the issue of unstable networks, but we have talked about it when we were here with Peter, that we are developing the new architecture. On the inefficient referral process, we've talked about the certification of counters. We have clients who are non-paying clients, for example, those who apply for documents for the first time. So we need to obviously create a mechanism so they don't go to the same queues like for people who come in and apply and pay for the services. Those that are non-paying, we're able to separate those. We also conduct an assessment for the implementation of the requirements for the collection. But it also introduced what we call the self-service kiosk, you know, for collection. But we do believe that most people feedback that we get is that people will say, hey, I had a very good application, excellent applying for a document, but I waited longer during collection. What we want to create that flexibility that people actually can just go and do self-service in those particular kiosks. We also do believe that uncoordinated communication strategies, compound the issue, and also that if we don't communicate very well, the issues of misinformation in social media take place. The announcement of the World Truth Campaign, we need to continue that through the media, and also a media campaign on rape and print interviews with print media to address the minister directed us that we do that in the DM. So we are dealing with that particular one. We intend to develop a heat map on our website, and this is doable. We use it internet and cell phones. What happens, Jefferson, is that in a particular area that similar that is used by when you look at Google Maps, for example, there is a company that has approached us to help us with that. So basically, what you do, you check the number of people who are in the office based on the number of cell phones in a area. The heat map will tell you how many people are there. You know, it shows whether it's red or green. You know, just utilizing the location of cell phones that are in that particular area. So that will help us because people can be able to go to our website and see the heat map. The other intervention strategies around the increased footprint with the banks, that will ensure that we exceed the number of live capture offices that we currently have. This will also address the capacity issues in the department because the agreement we have had with the banks is that as they are digitizing, most of the banking services in this country are now digitized. So they left with floor space, they left with people, that in terms of the agreement, we've entered into the negotiations with the Banking Association of South Africa, with Southport, the union representing the workers, that we can be able to absorb these particular workers and be able to perform this function. So this will help us in a big way. Also, it will obviously reduce the queues. We can be able to deploy some of these, even in rural areas, where dense sites are operating. So we're waiting for the finalization of the triple P with National Treasury. I've been in liaison with my counterpart in National Treasury and the procurement office to say how can we resolve this particular issue. Because the current triple P process is quite cumbersome. We launched the pilot with the bank in 2016, at the end of 2016. And up until now, we're still operating on that particular pilot model. We want to move away from that because this triple P partnership will give us over 200 sites and then will relieve the department, you know, in terms of the queues, and also will allow those really who are in need and who are able to use technology to book for services to work in offices that really, you know, are not contested and get services much more quick. With the refugee reception offices, we have introduced a booking system that is operational in PE and Desmond Tutu. The extension of certain categories also in 22 permit is done on the terminal, you know, the person, the refugee, the other speaker does not need to be able to go and see an official. They are able to automate, to self-service in those automated booking terminals. In the Cape Town office, for example, some of the categories of clients can be serviced as early as 5:30 in the morning through that particular terminal. And then the refugee or reception office is also encouraging staff to facilitate the intake of newcomers and directing them to relevant areas. Pregnant women, elderly, infant, and child-going, school-going children are also given preference. Same applies to the civil services. We apply the same models of around the world. We give those particular categories priority. We also, as I said earlier, that we have introduced an offline, off-site interpretation services, and that we have a national schedule within which we have nationalities of service. And the department has also finalized the business requirements verification document for the development of a new comprehensive Atlantic management system, which will be linked to our land capture platform. We are also in the process of moving the application and processing of refugee IDs and travel documents to certain civil service offices, which will allow the refugee reception office just to deal with the asylum seekers in consideration of their quotas. Because once the person is afforded their refugee status, then the person can actually, that is on hand, can go and apply for the documents via the civil status. So that way is underway. So we'll be able to finalize this early in the year. And that the refugee reception offices have further been equipped with a queue management system that is numerical in order. I must indicate that the, why we're able to do that in the future perception of the volumes are not the same as the civic officers, where we said it's in all 57 million people. But with the Fiji community, the Atlantica community, we are able to do that, categorize them, the nationalities and so forth, so the numbers can be controlled in that particular manner. So in terms of progress up to date, what we have done is the internal workings and inefficient workflow. We're saying we're so far we're able to increase the large capture offices to 193, as well as increase the number of bank branches that are rendering services. We continue to do that. Yesterday, the FNB Bettersport, I think the Absa Nels Trade, I think there were three yesterday that we connected. And then we also clustering low volume with high volume offices where we are able to redirect clients, particularly in the Western Cape. One of the things that they've done, and we have a gentleman, the production office in supply, is where they created even a WhatsApp platform that they share with radio stations. So the radio stations are able to help us to redirect people to say, like when they have two traffic reports, to say, actually, this office has low volume, citizens can go to that particular office. That helps to communicate the message. We also do what we call the issuance of a letter for reports or priority for the next day for the overflow clients. Opening of offices on over the weekend and public holidays, as Captain Minister has said, this is done on a voluntary basis by our staff. We've got a youth forum also in the department. They coordinated themselves, you know, and offer certain services, particularly in high volume offices. As I said, that during the certain peak periods, we're extending our office hours, like in 2020, on the 2nd of January to the 10th of January, we will be opening all our offices from 7 to 7, because we know it's a peak period, that, and that 7 to 7, it means that we must pay huge overtime for that purpose, so it's an investment that we have to make, same during festivities, during Easter period, same during school holidays, same during what we call a Christmas period, that we have to attend to the offices in order to be able to deal with issues. But at this point, we people will be demanding passports to be able to leave the Republic and go to other destination. We've also developed a monitoring tool to measure the average waiting time from when the client receives the ticket to the time the client receives the product. This is a very shortest period, by the way, in terms of our measuring. The biggest issue is getting inside the office. You know, but once the people are inside the office, the process was much more quicker. We also revived the office floor managers to assist in directing clients to correct services. That is why there's certain areas like we use the interns that are provided for, like in HMV by the municipalities. On the discontinuation of Saturday working hours, what we did is we appointed a task team to work on negotiations with organized labor. On to find a better model. We also benchmarked a shift model with other spheres of government which are operating on a shift system in order to obtain a mandate for negotiations with labor. Based on the outcome of the benchmark, recommendations were made in line with the public service regulations regarding the designation of working hours. So that work will continue with engaging with the union to resolve this problem. And then a total of 120 officials from various offices were trained, as I said earlier, on service, client services, service development improvement, and operations management. We implemented the WhatsApp group, you know, at national, provincial, and district level to be able to coordinate the work, and utilize the video conference, as I said. Process flows and layout of offices in certain areas were redesigned. One of those I mentioned was Mgeni, and also mentioned the Alexander office. And other offices, we've done that. We've improved the signage both in outside and inside the office. We've also had a ministerial engagement between Minister of Public Works and the Home Affairs in relation to the purpose being partnerships for the Department of Home Affairs. So there's been progress in that particular area. On the unstable network, we've introduced a daily branch availability report, which we implemented to serve as a monitoring tool because it gives data, network data in each office. And then we have talked about the plans for the new network architecture, which has been finalized. We established a command center and a war room that monitors functionality and analyzes problems and provides solutions throughout the day. and the service provider was appointed to assess the network of the department. We've already reported that to the committee, and obviously the findings, you know, that related to where our challenges lie, and where we have problems regarding to our power issues. We have issued all our land capture offices with fuel cards for the, you know, for direct procurement of diesel for generators, and also that the inspection of those generators is done and tested on a regular basis, so that when the power outage offices are not affected in that regard. And then with regard to unstable network, last mile, we've talked about that we've engaged to come up with alternative methods to leave offices. For example, in office in Dwentley, what we did there is that because the data lines were still copper data lines, we also installed what we call the microwave collection. We have at least two one connection. If the data line with copper one is down, we're able to use a microwave link for that particular area because it's not fiber made. So those are some of the interventions we've made in certain offices. Relating to the uncoordinated and communication strategies, provincial managers have in place the mechanism for redirecting clients to offices with less volume than I've talked about, Cape Town, Western Cape, and the methods that they're using. And also the awareness that they're improving communication with clients through the media, particularly the local community-based radio stations and other stakeholders. And the minister, Deputy Minister, DG, regularly updating the public around operational matters. The provincial managers and district managers have been assigned also as communicators of operations within their respective provinces and districts, and utilizing local media platforms. Talked about the WhatsApp group and the head of this conference, the video conference department, that was me. Chair, there's been a number of complaints and also positive feedback that was received from the public. You know, these are some of the message that we pick from social media where people are giving feedback. One client was saying in 3 days they were able to collect their ID in 3 days, you know, under 10 minutes. Another client who last week, you know, gave credit to the department. But we are not saying just setting ourselves in the back. We know that there are still areas of improvement that we need to do. The biggest issue to assess, as we have reported many times to the community, is that the capacity of our resources is what constrains us, because we do have a lot of innovation that we believe that we can actually implement in order to resolve some of the problems, actually making the offices more virtual and moving away from the traditional office. And we need to be able to ensure that we innovate as much as possible. And we are doing that with the limited funding that we have. So we just want to recommend that the committee knows the interventions and the progress that we are making in resolving long queues that are civil service officers and their future reception officers. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. I must firstly indicate that unfortunately I have to leave because I have to go to the NCOP's left committee where we are dealing with the BMA, the Border Management Authority, which is quite a very important meeting. But in the main, Chair, I think our presentation has been able to be very clear on the problems that we are faced with and was very clear in terms of the progress that has been made in the main and interventions that we are making on peak hours, like, since we are going to the festive seasons, the 7-to-7 operations, as well as some use of technology, for instance, in the reception centers, where an issue of just a renewal is able to be done, you know, at a EOC outside the department. But we will really appreciate for the committee to also, you know, share ideas with us on what better we can do in order for us to resolve the issues. But we are quite confident that we are moving in the right direction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So you are the issues of border management authority are issues that the committee general I want to give to members that something very urgent that I want to give to members on the quarter. But can I not, I'll make number one because I want to know here that we want to speak to the next one. I would just love that you are here, especially members of the committee,
on the individual basis, have reported to me that they visit this issue. So issues of food is something that they have a personal experience about. Honorable Muela, I saw him at his review the other time. Honorable Kanye, Sandra Chong, and so on. So this is a very passionate message that you know that you commit. I'll start with the honorable. But I will also read the letter on this thing. Honorable Kota, Honorable Ross, Honorable Matruba, Honorable Kanye. Honorable Watt, Honorable Muela, Honorable Tito, and Honorable Chaban. In that order, please.
Mr. Chair, I was not going for us to debate this matter. I wanted to make a request from the Deputy Minister, to the Committee and the Deputy Minister, and the Minister, and Cabinet. This thing, which we are faced with, requires a decision of cabinet. And I believe the simple reason is this. Government over time, perhaps unconsciously, have created a country in which you need to have interpreters of languages of the whole world. Because this legislation that has been created means everyone who wants to come to South Africa, we must have an interpreter for them here. We must have accommodation for them here. And anything and everything you can think of, trade. And if they are in this country, when you build a dam, you don't first bring the water in. You keep it out. And that's why every nation in the world requires you, before you leave your country, to go there. You must have interpreters and everything in your country. And then it's understood whether you may come or not. But now we've opened the thing. We must say to cabinet, you have created, or we allies, have created a legislative process that makes all the people of the world come into our country. And when they are here, before we even talk to them, we must have accommodation for them. If they are sick, they must be in hospital. If they are in prison and all of that. When are we going to finish that? And where is the budget? Where is the budget to employ these interpreters in this country? The unions and everything. So we need cabinet, and I just made this point. This presentation must be made to cabinet and say, look, what you have given Home Affairs, this problem that you're seeing Home Affairs must solve. Is there any Home Affairs of any country that can solve the problem that is? When you are protesting in this country, you make them stay with our citizens and everything. There are wars among the people. You call it xenophobia. South Africans don't hate people from other countries. But if you do this kind of thing, now you create war in our country, you create this and all of that. Cabinet must look at this thing. They must look at this thing. It's expanding. Children have been born here from other countries. You have to issue birth certificates not for South Africans, but for children that have come from other countries, that are born here. And I honestly do not, I'm listening to the DG speaking there. His mind is expanding as a result of all these problems. And with every addition, he creates another problem for himself and for all of us. We can't do this thing this way. Cabinet must hide this. Why is it that all the nations of the world are keeping their problems in their country and not sending them abroad? And we want to invite them, bring your problems to South Africa, we'll solve the world's problems. I'm sorry, but this is, I'm very glad I came here to see for the first time clearer than I've been thinking it. Just, this is an impossible problem to solve if we go this route we are going. The Deputy Minister, please, the Minister, I make this request to the committee, but I also make it directly to the minister, even to let cabinet sit just once and listen to this. And if they can say to me, no, 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 we are satisfied, we'll solve this thing, I'll give up on this country. Because it's not going to be solved. Not this way.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chief, for the presentation. I think it's good to see. It's good to see the department is doing an accessibility study, and it's good to see initiatives like the letter of priority. At least if somebody can't get to the front of the queue, the next day they know they'll be in the front of the queue. But the fact is, and it's been alluded to already, we just have a lack of sufficient resources at Home Affairs to deal with the myriad of problems. And so it's really important that we optimize wherever possible. And you mentioned a monitoring tool for the average times inside a civic office. So the challenge that I find with that is I went to Centurion office. And in the Centurion office, unlike at the Desmond Tutu Refugee Center, nobody was on their phone. They don't have time to be on the phone there. But you have about 7 staff that are handling the people. You have about 4 security guards, and then you have 1 cashier. So if you measured the total time from the beginning to end, how would you know that it's the cashier that is causing everybody there to pile up? And everybody to pile up outside. And so I'm urging you, DG, to seriously consider a time in motion study at Home Affairs. I know previously you said it's impossible. People do different things in a different session. But at least to get an idea of who is doing what and how long it takes. Because if you just measure from end to end, you're never going to be able to solve that problem. And you can have a situation where people are piling up inside, causing issues outside, and it's because you can't zoom in on what is the roadblock over there. If we look at the Border Management Authority, and my understanding is that it's going to cost Home Affairs an extra $6.5 billion by the time it's finished per year. So what I want to understand is, as we're already over the COE, the compensation of earnings, if we look at things like Saturdays, where will that leave us in paying for people to sit there on Saturdays? Where will there be funding from? How will we increase frontline staff if we're going to put $6.5 billion into the BMA? I just don't understand it. But if you look at the old days, you know, the old days you used to go to a bank and you would do everything at that bank. So I think we need to come with, you know, positive proposals. And certainly one thing is, if you look at the Section 22 permits, you go to a refugee reception centre. I think some of them are 3 months, some of them are 6 months that you have to come back. So my question is, why is it that we cannot sort of standardise on a 6 month return period? That at least you don't have people coming every 3 months. Does it make such a big difference to say, come every 6 months and we'll reduce the congestion at those refugee reception centres? Then the issue of people on the phone there, and I think, you know, Honourable Kanyile at our inspection in Loka, she raised an issue there, and I want to understand, has that been resolved? Because when I look back at previous committee minutes, I found that this same thing was raised over a year ago. Also, somebody at the refugee reception office on that shelter, and I want to understand, has that been resolved? I can't understand, you have the civics office where people are working themselves off their feet, and then at the refugee reception office, people have time to sit on their phone and hang around. Then I'd also like clarity on the Cape Town refugee reception office, because what is happening here is that then people are having to go elsewhere. But I'm getting conflicting information in this regard. So clearly there's a need for it. People come down here for whatever reason, and we're getting conflicting information. So I've got a response to a written question in terms of what the status of that is, and I was told it's busy being refurbished on that. But then the next minute we're told that the landlord is refusing to sign a lease. So I just want to understand what is happening with that, because, you know, as much as people come from the north, they're not restricted from moving around in the country, and it places pressure on the other officers when these people have to be maintained at the other offices. Then the booking system. So you mentioned that the poor will be disadvantaged because they will have to go once to do a booking and once to come back. But the fact is that you should go to them. I mean, if you're talking about the poorest of the poor, let me give you an example from Ekangala to town and back to cost you over 100 rand in taxi fare. And that's if they manage to get there on the day. If they don't manage, they'll have to come back the next day to go to a central location. So my suggestion would be to get those up and running as fast as possible and set up a schedule where people know that you're going to schools or you're going to the poorest areas, and use that accessibility study to see where are the furthest areas and then schedule those mobile units to go there. We really need those mobile units as fast as possible. And then let's talk about downtime. There's been a lot of reports in the media, and we've dealt with it as a committee a few weeks ago. Now, with the ABUS, we're told that you're going to replicate service to make sure that there's no downtime. So why could the department not do that for civic services at offices that clearly have a big pressure load? So for example, with Centurion, that office, just the Centurion area, is over 250,000 people, not to mention other people that are coming in. So when you do your accessibility study, it might say, on average, each office of yours has to cater for 120,000. So it's more than double just in that area. And you've got the tiny office that has no parking outside, so people have to double park or park next to the car train station. So my question to you there is, if we are able to, with the ABUS system, if we are able to now replicate those services to stop, to avoid downtime, why can we not do that at some of the civic offices that are under the most pressure? Get some replicated service there, so that then you eliminate that downtime, which is really critical. Coming to an end, Mr. Chair. The other question is just the option of couriering documents. So even if you go to a bank, you go there, you fill in whatever you need to fill in. But at the end of the day, when you need a new card or that, somebody delivers it to you. You don't have to go to the bank anymore. And that person, when you receive it, they have biometric systems, so you can sign for it, you can put a fingerprint, etc. So why do we not have a simple system? So for example, at that Centurion office, there's two people just dealing with collections. But I can bet you that if there was a way to courier that document to the recipient, 90% of people would take it up. And you could free those two people up to actually process to be a cashier or do something else in that office. And then finally, in terms of general inquiry, so in one of the first slides, you talk about people complaining, phoning in to try and complain. And I think the challenge now with what people phoning in is just trying to get in touch with Home Affairs or and my question here is, as the department considered, and I brought it up before, having some sort of a CRM system, where if you've applied for something, it's going through a process in the department, wherever the process is, that whoever's doing it just says, this is where the process is, this is where the process is. So that instead of somebody having to phone you or go to the office to say, where is my permanent residence, where is this, that they can go onto a system or they can send an SMS, and it will say that your inquiry is here at the moment, it's ready for printing, it doesn't matter that. And I believe that would drastically slash the number of phone calls that people have to sit and try and send, the emails that you have to try and answer. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to register my fright. When that siren went off, I got so scared, I thought the police coming in here. Chair? On behalf of the collector. I got scared because I don't know. On behalf of the collector, I want to give our gratitude for extending, or rather extended, the invitation to opposition parties to be part of the management. It gives us an opportunity to have a say in the running of this portfolio. And I also, in the same breath, would like to invite other political parties to make use of this. Then, on a very low note, and with due respect towards the director, I'm not impressed with what is presented in front of us. If you Google and you go back, you'll see a year, 2 years ago, same speech, same WhatsApp group, same recommendation, same everything. Now, this survey has been dealt with a year ago, and the question arises, why is it not being implemented? You say, yeah, well, this thing is very old that we are seeing in front of us. And for me, it's not just about war on long queues. It's about the safety of the citizens out there. The safety of the citizens, nothing has been said to date, ever since we engaged on the 8th of May, about the office in Bloemfontein, that it's falling apart if you happen to have a certain amount of people, and then you have the building shaking. So these are the issues that we need to address. And I want to say in the same breath, even the office of Cape Town has been mentioned. There's a lawsuit, and there's an outcome that we have to move. They were supposed to move, and maybe if there is indication whether they have moved yet or not, we would like to know what the situation is there. But going there, I've been there, 5 o'clock in the morning. I stood there in the lines with all the refugees and asylum seekers. And long lines is unbearable. This country cannot afford that. If you look in comparison what is happening in other countries when it comes to that. The crux of the matter is that CETA is the elephant in the room. Staff and the reduction of the 5% in our budget. Once, as Honorable Ikota has said, we are not going to address this, then the war on long queues, I think we can forget about it. The Saturday issue, there are only certain officers, and maybe we must get a list from the department where are those officers, because we want to go and see. I know at some offices there are arrangements where people take off and work on Saturdays, and even on Saturdays, if we have communities out there, it is reported in this portfolio committee that there is no security at some of our buildings in this country on Saturdays. So we need to address that. So we need to know which offices is opening on weekends, on public holidays, and all of this is happening in the midst of cost cutting. Nothing has been said as far as legislation is concerned. Now, do we need a change in legislation to better the lives of the people out there? But let me get to the crux why I'm saying I'm not impressed with this. We are being presented with this, and we have been told that this research is qualitative research and quantitative research. Now, no demographics, it doesn't speak to the approach in terms of design, and there's no sampling of data. Where has this happened? In this place, it happened there, as far as the long lines is concerned. I would wanted to see something showing us where we read about words, remarkably, this is happening, this increase there, it's an increase there. I mean, there's no table here. And if I read or have something in front of me, I must also make my own conclusion. I can't make my conclusion of something that has been taken from a WhatsApp or something that has been taken from Facebook, even where the director himself was a participant on Facebook posting something, or when Tumisani spoke about the work of Home Affairs. It was a passport, and we know the servers. We speak about Tumisani, who talked about something on Facebook, but we don't give the comment of Busan. And then you have the director of this organization copy paste another post of Uafuli Sivase and engage with the community. We don't want this. We want anecdotal evidence. Evidence to say, listen, here is it. So if we can go there to these offices, we must also be aware ourselves of what is happening. I've been here to the Cape Town one as well. I said from the morning up until 2, 3 o'clock, And I reported to this committee what has transpired in there. So I think we must send Home Affairs backpacking and come with some report that we can analyze our own data, make our own conclusion, and go into the communities to weigh this up of what is happening. But I can tell you, we will never be able to win the fight on long queues if there is no money. Now, we spoke, and we see your genuine approach of having this a very open, democratic, multi-party portfolio. I see that. Whether you're going to court or whether you've been locked up, you do good work in the committee for us. That is what we see. And I want to commend you on that. And I would want you to push the minister so that he can engage with cabinet as far as this budget constraint is concerned. I've asked the question, whether the 5% budget decrease will have an effect. The answer is yes. So how are we going to win the war on long queues if it will be having an effect on online service delivery? My colleague has been to the office yesterday, and what he did not share with you was that there are muscles in the line. What are they doing? Helping people, no, you go there, you go there. Put the people behind the counter so that they can help our community, so that we can shorten the lines as soon as possible. This is the kind of debate and arguments we must start getting engaged in to assist in helping us. But again, we can talk so that we can be blue. The money, the fact that there's no employment, we have no managers in some of the organizations, there's no staff. I think we are fighting a losing battle. We're not fighting war on long queues. We are fighting a losing battle as far as queues in this country is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Shepherdson. I also think that the department is not winning the war on issues because some senators went away by the community members. The department just sold their arms. I'm referring to what the Honorable said raised actually in overtime. We saw one official on the cell phone white line was in front of him. When he connected him over there, I think it was in August, and reflect the man comes to raise the man come on a number of meetings, we have been asking for that report. Up until now, the house, the policy is about to rise, we have not seen that report. And on the presentation from the department, there is a list that speaks to inconsistent communication and personnel attitude at Home Affairs offices. Proves to be a challenge in minimizing client dissatisfaction and making the situation unbearable while waiting in queues. I've also been a victim on the staff of attitude. And some of the officials, they are very rude. It is only when you tell them that you are the member of parliament that they start treating you with respect. And that is totally unacceptable. Everybody should be treated with respect, irrespective of who you are, because these offices, they exist to serve members of the community, not members of parliament. I have raised this question before, it was ignored, and I'm going to raise it again. During the oversight that we conducted in one future, we had this interaction with the people that were there, and one of the asylum seekers, when I was asking him that, why is he in the country? He said to me, I think he was coming from Zimbabwe, if I'm not mistaken. I have left home because my father was married to four wives, and when he passed away, things are getting difficult at home. That is why I actually left to come to South Africa. So then my question was, does that reason qualify that person to get the permit, to the asylum seeker's permit? Also, the issue of mobile offices. In our presentations that we are taking this portfolio committee, it keeps on coming up, and I remember in the last conversation it was made very clear that the mobile units, they have been refurbished, the only thing that is outstanding, they need to install the network. When we are giving this presentation, we will meet within a time frame, so that when we go back to our constituencies, we can be able to also report back to them. I also would like to know why is the department unable to implement the upgrading system, and if this functionality is able to be incorporated into the e-home affairs online application process. There's another one that the acting teacher spoke about when he was talking to the fact that people cannot be able to make an appointment because they will have to go twice into the office. I think he was looking at the cost part of it. But I also believe that if this function can be done through a cell phone, it would be easier. It would be easier if we can find a way of using an appointment system when you go to home affairs offices. I think that was covered on page 25. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I have questions to ask Yes, we do overtime. There are problems. And we are admitting that there are problems. The department is admitting that there are problems. For me, sitting here and asking them questions will not resolve problems. We must come up with ways on how we are going to do it to resolve the problems that are there. Because every time we come to a portfolio committee, for me, sitting here, the department is saying to us, we acknowledge we have a problem. And this is what we are trying to do as a department, to resolve the problem, but it's not easy. There is an effort. For one, they are saying, yes, we see a need for us to employ more staff. But the budget does not allow us. And we voted for the budget as members of parliament. We are sitting here today, they are saying to us, we want to work around the issues of queue management. Yes, we acknowledge we do our constituency work, but when are we going to assist them rather than every time weeping on them and identifying their problems? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Tito, then Honorable Mwen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also think that what Honorable Lekota was saying, that we must take this presentation and table it as a cabinet, because of Home Affairs is experiencing lots of problems, but without any budget, then we are not going anywhere. And the presentation also, there were tables here before us on the curbing of the long queues. I think that what has the department implemented, the plans and everything, they must also make sure that they go there physically to see that everything is going accordingly, because if you can't come up with a plan and then at the end of the day, you are not the one that is responsible to make sure that the plan that you are coming with is being implemented. So I think that right now, we will see on the coming 3 months on what is going to happen, and then see that if this presentation is going to work for us or not. So I'm not going to say anything on that, but I think that the cabinet must see what is happening in the Home Affairs department. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair, for
the opportunity. Now, Honourable Matrova, you are right. When this siren was making noise, it also came into my mind. I was also scared to say, hey, probably the similar incident that happened in Tshwane municipality might have affected us also here, among yourselves. So I was scared up until the siren came to a stop. I thought that probably by here, looking for one of you, on a light note, I was not sure. Let's appreciate the honest presentation from the Department of Home Affairs. I think it's important that we, you see, when the teacher was presenting, he confirmed that he's now honorable the court as presenting on behalf of the department, but he's telling us what is exactly affecting them as a department. He was very honest to the committee and to the nation. We need to agree that the Home Affairs is one of the critical departments. It's one of the other departments that are very critical. And for us to be able to be judged as honorable members, representative of which political party and so on, will be judged by servicing our people based on what Home Affairs is doing and what is giving to our people. I want to raise one or two issues, Vichy and the entire team from Home Affairs. That let us look into the matter of internal networks and so on. Because some of the other matters that have raised DG and it also affects our services and delivery to our people. Because you go to Home Affairs and then you'll be told that the network is not working and so on and so on. So please let's try because I'm told that you have met with CETA and they're trying to resolve some of those challenges. Let's do that. Let's speed up that process so that we don't find ourselves in a crisis where somebody from far in Mbuzini, in Mpumalanga, traveling many kilometers to look for an ID and so on, to apply for a smart type ID, and when he arrives there's a problem, that person must travel or go back. So please, let's attend to that matter and make sure that it helps our people. I don't see the issue of teaching resolving the queue matter, the long queue matter, because I'll go to Home Affairs, I'll have a ticket that says you are number two or number what, and then the very same queue will be there. So I don't see it actually resolving the actual problem of a long queue in Home Affairs. It's just a management. To me, it's just a management process to manage the queue, to say you are number one, this one is number two, and so on and so on. Let us also look into the matter of taking services to our people. Previously, you had this program of going to our rural areas to give the needy and support them, those who are in need, those who have got serious challenges. Let's revisit that program. I don't know how I want to do it because even in schools, it's just a proposal teaching. Even in schools, previously you had this program when you go to schools, they apply for IDs and so on and so on. I know now the problem that you might have is this network problem. Because if you apply a smart card ID, you must have a network that is linked so that it's clean and so on. The machine, all those things. Can we look into that? And as we go to, as I align myself with Honorable Court,
we need to engage cabinet on this matter. As we do that, we are able to make a full presentation with quotes and everything so that we try and minimize this problem. Because most of the affected people are those who come from rural areas. I know for sure that from where we are now, you have got a branch just close here, which is fully functioning and very effective, and probably you might have another satellite around not far from here. Let's look into those areas that are highly affected in Fiji, where our people really need things, the rural areas. Honorable Chair is correct. I once visited one branch in Hazelview. That office in Mpumalanga Hazelview is servicing a number of areas. People are traveling from different areas far to that Hazelview office. What I'm trying to say is that if we can strengthen the partnership that we're presenting, that we're just telling us about, the private partnership and so on, I think that can also assist in minimizing the queues and minimizing those who travel a long distance. I've raised this matter somewhere to say, you will find people from Bushbuck Ridge area traveling from Bushbuck Ridge to Hazelview because from a home affairs in Bushbuck Ridge does not give them the service that they might need at that particular time. So let's look into that because that is a very serious matter. You study people, household and so on. As you are saying about partnership with FNB and so on, let's focus on that. Let's make sure that our relationship with those private companies, we are strengthening that partnership. But let me to say, Honorable Chair and DPG, let us all of us, as Honorable Members, as the department officials, let's commit ourselves in servicing our people. Let's take services to our people because Home Affairs, as I've said earlier on, it's one of the departments that must at all times give services to our people. And we can't survive without Home Affairs. And for us to be able to survive, we need your contribution, PG, and the department. And let's look into, as Honorable Member was saying earlier on, the issue of budget is us. If we need to really relook the issue of budget, let it be so, because that's where you are mostly affected. We're speaking about issues of problems in other offices. We have got the full capacity of staff complement. We need to enter into that space. You spoke about issues of overtime and so on. We need to enter into that space. Let's engage the unions. It must be our responsibility, at the full level, the minister and the deputy minister, to also engage the unions on how best can we resolve the problem and how best can we build a very strong relationship between the employee, between the employer and the employees, together with unions. Because that's where we are lacking. We are lacking in such a way that we don't want to build a relationship. So let's build those relationships with unions, let's engage them, let's talk to them, because at the end of the day, we will reach an agreement. That's my contribution, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think some of the issues that have been captured by the colleagues. It is important to
reorganize the honorable quota, not to give up now. Because of the contribution they've made to some of the legislation that the department were operating. And I think it's important that we must at all times communicate and write so that our people who elected us must not see us as being here, and when there are critical issues to advance and debate, we say to them, no, we want to give up, because the expectation is that all of us must rise and assist the person. I think that point must always be with the members of the committee. We welcome the support of the department. The department is elevating issues, the weaknesses that have been with the department for a period. If you go back to the ATT and the first quarter report to the department, some of the issues are coming out in terms of how the department is struggling on certain issues of implementation. And those are the issues affected by the fiscal, the budget, which the department has been putting on at all times when the committee meets with the department. You go to the IEC, you go to government print on work. These are the issues that are coming out of the department, which are obstacles for the department to implement certain areas that they have to do that. Colleagues are correct that we may need to continue engaging Treasury, Chairperson, the Portfolio Committee of Finance, in terms of how the Department of Home Affairs and other departments that are affected by this budgetary cut will be able to be assisted to realize the objectives that have been set on. I think the report also highlights some of the programs that need to be implemented. But the limitation is funding. And it's where members of the committee will need to enforce engagement with the Treasury so that we are able to identify issues that we want the department to follow. The President, in his own, has highlighted certain issues that the department must focus on in the fiscal period. Budget vote of the minister has identified some of the issues that they must focus on. So we may need to highlight some of the issues that are limiting the department because of the budgetary funding. We have made this feature change in terms of the IT card, and I think the committee has resolved in its mind that part of the weaknesses that the department is finding itself in is the feature connection. And we are faced with that problem as a committee and other departments that are in the connectivity with it. We may need to venture in terms of the how would get CISA to assist the department. I mean, the DG says if the network cuts, the whole offices in the country are offline, and it affects to services to the community. It may not be the department, but CISA. So we may need to critically work towards getting CISA to assist the department, in particular Home Affairs, because it deals with citizens. Ship of our people. We need services to our people. The issue of the your pilot DG, over time your highlight is on urban headed. And I think Honorable Mwela is correct that we may need to advance to rural areas. Rural areas, we mean that towns that are surrounded in the main by disadvantaged areas. We need to, the department must extend its hand to rural areas because most of our people are struggling to receive services from the department of distance, of problem of unemployment, or there's no income generation from our people to move from point B to point A. You move 2 weeks, come back home,
without being affected. So we think the department must be able to have all the recommendations, extend your pollution focus on the areas that are surrounded by the rural areas. And I think we will also explore actually the reasons why the department is taking an urban route approach of piloting, where I think we can be able to do more to bring through our to our people for service delivery. The other area which I think the department is not doing well is this long shoot. In Kikamarenberg, one of the areas there, you have what you call now agents, or middlemen, who you find our community members on the queue. We come there, Mr. Mabuso is a middleman, bring, take another person, pay, jump the queue, you go with assistance, an official there inside, link with the middleman. What are the mechanisms that you need to are in place so that the department is able to do that? Because you have a person who comes in the morning, queue the whole day, with the thinking that the process is long. Can this person has been frustrated by the maintenance? We need the department to come with the proper plan. It may be happening throughout the country, which contributes to the long queues and other people benefit to deprive our extend the services to all our areas of distance and so forth and so on. Look on the issue of retraining. I think Honorable Makula has raised it partly. Home Affairs may need to take advantage of the CETAS at the Department of Higher Education to continuously to retrain particularly the youth in the gift space on how you can collaborate with the Department of Education to utilize the CETAS, the budget that is there, retrain our young people, unemployed, that can continuously assist us in the offices, the Department of Home Affairs, on the long shows and frontline offices, so that we have an impact on the service delivery that we think we must do. So I think one of the issues that we must look on is to open engagement with the Department of Higher Education for retraining of our young people, particularly those that are unemployed, to be in the system. I know that they're doing a good way in terms of retraining for various skills to opportunities that are created by our government. It's important for the department to look on that area. We may need to look also on the mobile track, which we have in the process raised DG and your team to be rescheduled where service is needed to eliminate the long queues, but also the long distance for our people. We know that we have limited resources in terms of the procuring or securing more mobile trucks. It would be important to have scheduling with the provincial offices, run also with the municipalities in terms of these mobile trucks to bring services closer to our people. Even the issue of corruption and fraud around the issues that are impacting the department. We must get from you, DG, on how you are going to enhance and to put your foot down in terms of this issue of corruption, which affects the department. Once the committee has engaged with the Treasury, the committee and Parliament must have a view to enforce happiness
to assist the department. We can't say that the report that was presented to us must refer to cabinet. We can't discuss it here. We must discuss it, take it to the Treasury Portfolio Committee. Parliament must get a view of what are the frustrations that the department are frustrated, including the Home Affairs. Then we must enforce work that must be done by cabinet. We know that the budget cuts teaching in terms of the issues that are raised. But the basic thing that the department can avoid to deal with. We went to Desmond Tutu. And Honorable Kayunis is right. That report is on the question. We have instructed you, DG and the Minister, and the DM, in the last portfolio committee, that there was an incident that happened in view of the portfolio committee members on the front office. A foreign national comes to be assisted there. Our frontline citizens playing with the cell phone, delaying the queue. Those are the issues, basic issues that contribute to long queues. We raised the matter on the spot with your head of the institution there, asking if we're not there, what would we be doing? There are no clear answers and immediate response. You come here and the minister and the DF community, we ask him, we raise the matter, you have not even responded. You tell us that you know about the matter. You tell us, you confirm that you know about the matter, but there's nothing that's done on this. The committee has not received a response and practical steps that have been done. So these are the basic issues. That the basic issues that you can't do, but the complex issues that you have presented to the committee that you can't do on the basis of finding. But the issues that the committee ourselves is still there, but you can. You should have reported to us, this is part of the work we are doing. If it happens throughout the offices in the country, it means we can't get the response to that issue. And it contributes to the service. We must work on the customer relations, the attitudes of our people. That's a critical frontline work that we must work on. It can't be right that when you go to the institution, when you want to be assisted there, you must be assisted on the basis of your seniority in society. I mean, Honorable Reporter, then immediately you must just be taken assisted, finished quickly, and Honorable Thomas Bongo, you must be assisted. And a person who has been there for a long time can't be assisted. You must communicate your line function that matter must be stopped. Members of society must be assisted. The last point I think we must be elevated. We do understand that when asylum or foreign nationals when they come to the border, because they've signed UN, were part of the international signature, is that obviously it would be difficult for me as an asylum when I enter, say I want an asylum, these are the issues. And I think one of the areas the minister, I think the issue must come on that area, that the reasons to have asylum seekers coming to the country is what was not bad at the first phase in the border. Because of the citizen services, and you are allowed to enter, be given a permit to be in the country for particular phase. But once your program of bringing the center at the border line is implemented, it will mostly try to alleviate and assist the department to move forward, including the border management process that is going on. We will not refrained from engaging with the report. The report has elevated weaknesses that require Parliament and the committee to engage further in terms of the department to have more resources to respond to these issues that they were faced on. Issues that have been raised at DG, that the committee needs a response. We need the minister and the team to take this matter as a defense.
Another question. I see you also wrote me a note. Can you talk
yes,
to me?
Yes. I really want to talk to my colleagues in the committee. In the committee, this is really what I want to address. Because, comrades, we are members of parliament. We are the people who vote for the budget to address the business that we have given Home Affairs to address. Now, when we budget that money, we take it from the total income of the nation. But we did not, when we gave Home Affairs the money we give them, we don't give them money. No, I just want to make, I'll make it very short, I won't make it very long. But I want to focus the input I was making to why I was making it. It can't be said that we are expecting Home Affairs to build accommodation for people who come from other countries. You see, that's not the money, don't give them money for that. We don't give them money to come into, to look for people that come into this country and arrange for them to transfer from East London to Dantari and things like that. But these issues, all these issues that this government is now struggling with, they require a budget of that nature. Because we've given our, the budget that we have given for housing is going to the Department of Housing. And the point, simple point I was making, our government made a judgment mistake because if you say to people who are in other countries, come into our country and we'll deal with your problem when you are in this country, you are now creating a situation that no nation in this world does. Why you see countries of Mediterranean trying to stop people that are coming from outside from coming inside until there have been discussion, an arrangement, an agreement whether these people may come in or not come in? It's to avoid this problem that I'm talking to. Please, don't let people from why Trump is trying to build a wall between Mexico and his country. He's terrified of this problem as well. Why there's a border drawn between Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire is to avoid this problem. Why we were involved in Burundi and Rwanda at the time of the genocide there, I was the Minister of Defense there. Because the whole thing was, once you let these people come into this country, they become a problem of the country they have come to. They've got to be looked up. If they steal, they've got to be arrested and put in the prison. But your budget for the prisons is for your prisoners. Your budget for your hospitals are for your sick patients of your country. Those hospitals were built. We didn't budget for the people of Saudi Arabia or Egypt or something who are here or Nigeria or that kind of thing. No. So the hospitals are overloaded, the medicines are get finished, the pillars are gone. Please, comrades, these nation states, these borders you see drawn, who pays the tax? Yes. You, the citizens of Africa, must pay taxes. You can't go and take the people of another country and say they must come and pay taxes. And out of this tax, we pay our membership to the United Nations, to the OAU, and all of that. So that the problems of Africa, which African Union must deal with, our membership fee there to the AU, money must be taken there to deal with that. All of these things, comrade, are arranged. And tell me, which country do you know of, which says to the people of other countries, if you've got a problem with your country, you can just run into our country, we'll deal with your problem afterwards. They don't do none. Not the Arab countries, not the United Nations, not the African Union. These comrades, these governments of Africa, we pay membership to the African Union, and out of that contribution, they must deal with the problems of the people. The members of the United Nations, we pay membership. Out of that, there's money that is assigned to deal with the problems of this. What are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing to ourselves? Why are we saying every other country may just pay that and then it can deal with it, but we will take the problems of the world. They must come here and we'll sort them out. So that is the issue that I'm trying to make. The Home Affairs is not just about, it's supposed to deal with the problems of South Africa. If I need a passport, you need a passport, Home Affairs must issue such a good passport and so on. Only when we have approved somebody to come and stay in this country, that person can then come in here, and then we can do that. But you don't say first to them, come inside, come, this is your home, and so on. After that, it's like letting the water come into the house, and then say, now I must take it out so that this furniture is not wet. It's too late. It's completely wet. So I'm saying we must tell cabinet. We must tell cabinet and we must tell parliament. You pass laws which are now defeating us as government, as a country. This is the problem, is the problem of the laws we have passed. I was part of it. That's why I'm telling you this thing. I was part of that.
I don't know. I don't want the veteran in the court to be emotional about this problem. So, you want to say something before I give the teacher's response? Okay, how about you, the teacher's response? But thank you very much for painting a very clear picture of what is happening. And I see members are contributing also with their viewers who may need to book. Try to respond. Don't respond as if you are defending yourself. Respond such that members generate even much more ideas to give back to you to go and implement on behalf of our people.
No, thank you very much, Chair. The nicest thing is that I'm not a very good with spinning. Not very good at spinning. Neither am I good in diplomacy, so I say things as they are. So let me just register with just a quick comment. Part of the problem that we have is that if we have inefficiencies in the department, inefficiencies lead to corruption. Because people seek ways of working around the system. For example, the matter that has been raised of the Peter Maraspec office that's under childhood raising. Agents and things like that. It's because if people are not able to get services in the manner that they wish to, for example, when someone wants to come at a particular time, well, that's the only time that they have. Like I will always make an example, like a medical doctor who's in hospital needs a passport, can't be queuing for 5 hours there. So that's when you will then have, you know, people doing precisely a precedent of queuing for them. And which is something that is problematic, I think, for us. So that is why we need to create mechanisms to open up. Same issues around issues of tennis. The reason why people end up falling prey of unscrupulous agents who issue them with fraudulent documents is precisely because of that. So we need to innovate. But some of the innovations that we want to make, Chairperson, are frustrated by our legislative framework. We have been, you know, dealing with National Treasury to say that we do need some revamp of our legal instruments like the CFMA, because we cannot put old rules in new problems. You know, we need to find a way to see how can departments innovate in a manner that, you know, will bring more services to the nation, you know, without having to follow certain cumbersome processes. Like with the security partnership development that we're talking about, it's an innovation that does not require the state to put any sense in it. But, you know, the processes that we follow is as if we are putting some money in this state, and then they're so cumbersome to such an extent that we're finding ourselves even losing the team really to innovate further because of those cumbersome processes. Now, the issues raised by Honorable Gota around the interpretation services, it is true that in terms of our constitution, obviously, we cannot discriminate. We need to ensure that in terms of our international conventions and the United Nations, that we need to ensure that when people are in the country taking asylum, we are able to assist them with the language of their choice. Whether we can afford that is another question, but the challenge is that we definitely, you know, have a huge constraint. We don't provide people who come into the country any accommodation. So I must make it very clear in that regard. People who are asylum seekers, that's why we can then the Section 22 permits allow them to work, you know, operate the business of study, and in the majority they're able to look after themselves in that particular regard. So that is the issue, that the only thing that we do is that we have to ensure that when they are being interviewed, they are being interviewed in the language of their choice. And then the other issue is around the allocation of budget that comes to the Parliament. We did some few steps when we were preparing to go to Cabinet to submit what we call a business case on the repositioning of the Department of Home Affairs. We did an analysis of what would be an adequate budget to find the operations of the Department. At that particular time, I think that's in 2016, we were projecting that the Department of Home Affairs would at least a minimum of about 18 billion less for it to be able to fulfill its mandate on an annual basis. Currently, we get about 8 billion rand of that amount, and 2 billion rand of that amount goes to IEC because IEC gets the amount. So technically, you could say that we're getting about a 6 billion rand budget, which is 4 billion rand of that goes to the compensation of employees. We've been quite fortunate with National Treasury because the revenue that we collect of about a billion rand a year, we're able to get it back to augment, you know, for example, that revenue collect when we issue passports, IDs to citizens. We get back that revenue because there are certain categories of citizens who are not paying for the document. For example, if you are getting an ID for the first time, the first issue is free. If you are getting the birth certificate for the first time, it's free. So we generate revenue somewhere in order to also, you know, put it back in the system in order to give the citizens that particular one. But also, I must say that some of the products that we produce, like the passports, we currently charge 400 rand for a passport. The production of the passport costs us over 520. So for every passport that we issue, we're subsidizing the citizen. We have gone to National Treasury to request that we revise the tariffs. So we're still in that particular process. So that's just one of the areas where there's a leaking, you know, package where we can be able to close the issue. Now, let me quickly run then to the question raised by Honorable Ross. I do take the point around the comment. We are going to bring the accessibility study, what we call it, we will share with members of the committee. And the issue of the time in motion study, I think it's quite a good proposal. So we'll look into that. The Section 22 permit, in the majority, is 6 months. The issue of the 3 months, I'm not sure where it's coming from, because it's supposed to be a minimum of 6 months. To ensure that we're able to determine that particular issue. So I would like to follow up on that. We would indicate that with the Cape Town Refugee Reception Office, we found a facility in the Belleville area. What happened is that DPW went on to the market, they advertised, looking for premises, they were the bidder who was successful. We then discovered when the process was completed, we set out the plan to say that it could be refurbishing this particular man. That actually, that individual was not only in the building. You know, it was someone with an intention to buy the building so that they could. So it was quite strange that someone who
who did not own the building but was identified as a successful bidder, but at the time he had not actually purchased the building, and his deal fell off. So that is affecting us. And this is one of the biggest problems that I think as a state we need to resolve, because we definitely cannot continue to have a state that, you know, relies on rented facilities. We talk about state owning its own facilities, but once we get the refugee reception office, it must be permanent. It should not be owned by the state, because this issue of moving from this, you know, as a tenant to this facility to that facility is not helping us. It brings all the problems to say that the department is not serious about resolving this. That is why we said we cannot be a tenant state. We need to resolve the issue of infrastructure on a permanent basis, because the Department of Home Affairs does not need lease facilities, need permanent offices, because we want to be operating for the next 100 years and beyond. The booking system, we are saying that it will affect the poor. It is true. It will affect the poor, because it's people that are not able to have, you know, access to offices, to computers. That is why we are saying it will be better that, for example, in the e-home affairs platform, we are moving the traffic away from the traditional office to your bank. We're going to move traffic away from the traditional office to your apps, because those who have access to smartphones and other technologies, those are the ones who can be able to move out of that particular queue. And it will benefit those who have not have access, because then those offices will be clogged. The mobile units, we are continuing sending these mobile units to provinces, as I've said before. We continue with the connectivity of the mobile offices. We did commit, when you came here on the first quarter, with your call, Chairperson, our commitment was by the end of the financial year, all the 100 mobile units would have been connected. And we are on track with that particular process. We'll definitely ensure that that would have done. And then those mobile offices will go to each province, will be allocated in streets, and then the province will draft a schedule on how they service their schools. Because one of the mobile standards will be in a district, depending on the size of the district, and then the district will manage that particular schedule with the relevant key stakeholders. And I do take the point around the issue of the Children Office, and again, I just want to emphasize the point that those offices that we are making reference to are not ideally suitable for the department that we're sending. So we need a different type. We have actually submitted prototypes to public works, how we want the medium office, the large office, where the architect, you know, making an architecture drawing for us to be able to do that. So that's the project really that we want to see happening as quickly as possible. And the issue of couriering of documents is an option that we are considering. And we have asked the authorities to get that option. We want to start with the missions abroad, because our citizens who are abroad are suffering the most, and that's a category of citizens that we are prioritizing in relation to the provision of courier services. And locally also we need to look at that option. Chairperson, I must say there is a huge problem with courier services in Africa, where most of the couriers get hijacked, you know, on a regular basis. Even just we suffer from that, where certain documents, you know, get lost because of the hijacking that happens. So it's something that we want to, because we want to control, you know, the movement of documents to ensure that it reaches the person. I do know someone who said that the banks are issuing cards to them. It's easy to catch up to cut them. A card is, what it was. By the time it gets to the even if it hijacks the card, but it's not activated. It only gets activated when you receive it. But in this instance, you know, your passport is a passport. By the time it leaves the office, it's activated. But how are we going to cap the digitalization of passport fraudulent? For example, is that we are going to be launching the e-gate system. We're starting here with the pilot of the NK1, we'll start in South African travelers, where you will be able to use your biometrics for the e-gate to open, because it will link directly with Harris and agents. So you are the owner of this particular passport, you know, that you are carrying. So that's the one area which we are looking at in terms of dealing with the stolen documents. But Korea is an option that we are considering. Around General Mindwad, we do have the CRM system, but it's located just in the contact center. So, but the point around people checking their own application is something that we need to consider. I just want to say, Chairperson, in the past, we used to have an SMS system where somebody to check for the Boolean Mesa status, their status, whether they are dead or alive, and many other related things. We discussed with that person. The reason is that the criminals were usually the cyber, for cybercrime. They were using that to do phishing on information. So it was posing a threat to us. So as part of information security improvement, we are looking at what are the options that we can utilize, because you need to use this platform that the criminals are ahead of you in terms of cyber warfare. So we are trying to deal with that particular issue to ensure that we don't compromise the data, because utilizing those unsecured mechanisms. But definitely we do want to take the control to the hands of the client so that they can be able, you know, to see where their products are and things like that. With IDs, passports, it's quite easy when they call the contact center, because they're able to check on the CRM where their documents are. With penalty, they're still a bit behind in relation to that, because there's no process, there's no automated process to check that they are got. I'm able to see that because on the visa adjudication system, it's for us as officials, but when there are permits that are coming to me for approval, then I'm able to see that it comes from this particular individual in this day. But that's not visible to the client. But I think moving forward, we do need to improve our system in that regard. Look, Chairperson, there are systems that can do that. It's just that the procurement process in the public service also presents other challenges, where you end up with an elephant that you don't want, you know, that you're procured through your bid processes, while the systems that they can actually over the shelf, that they, you know, they can give you that particular alternative. Honourable Magro, I do take the point you are raising on the issue of the case administration. I think I've answered that. The bank card is quite true. The Saturday operation, we cannot do it on an overtime basis. Saturday operation, how we used to do it was that every employee who works Saturday, they work a shift system and they work a 40-hour week, so that we ensure that they would start during the week, they'll start later than the other officials, so that they can have the hours that they must work on a Saturday. It is quite difficult to run a department on a permanent overtime, because also in terms of TPSA, there's a ceiling of the overtime demand that an employee cannot exceed 30% of their cannot end more than 30% of their salary at overtime. So that's a challenge that we have. But in the past, we used to have a contract employee which we absorbed into the department on a permanent basis. The reason what we are trying to do there was to give more capacity so that we don't have to pay overtime on Saturday and have less than staff to actually allocate into the shift. So that particular project collapsed in 2017, when there was an agreement that we withdraw a circular that was introduced in those particular hours. And around the issue of qualitative and quantitative data and the sampling of information, we have all of that. So I'm more than happy to. I don't want to really come here and, you know, give the committee data issues and so forth. But I'm more than happy to bring that to the team. That collect data on a daily basis that can, we can share that information, so, but we thought we would not bring technical information to the committee, but we invite them to do that. We're more than happy, and it's Dharma and immigration, they've got all that information that they can give to us, give to the committee. Honorable Kanile, we don't really fold in our arms. I must say that I will check on that particular issue specifically. Why that report has not, reached the committee was we did ask the chief director of the government to take some steps against that particular official. And the issue of staff that are rude, we train people on a regular basis, but sometimes you do find that in a particular day, your clients and staff members, they just go at each other, because of different situations, how they approach each other. But we do encourage our people to be more professional and treat everybody that comes to our office with respect. But also, you do have incidents of people who approach our offices knowing that they don't qualify for certain documents, but they're actually trying their luck. And this is when people sometimes would find that they would have run in stuff because they're actually trying to be very unscrupulous in the manner that they. But I would not defend 100% that all our staff members, are polite, that those who are not doing the right things, and it's something that we are working on. That's why we talk about continuous training on operational management and client services
as a key matter that we need to deal with. On the Zimbabwe that you made an example of, that person does not qualify for a salary. So what is very clear that when you are persecuted for either religious or reasons, for political reasons, for sexual orientation, for many others, but the fact that you have a problem with your family is not a category which you can actually qualify as an asylum seeker. These are the people who are during that process of asylum seeker as an economic migrant or any other migrant in that regard. So those are the issues that really, honorable members, that I want to indicate that person does not qualify. In terms of the time frame from mobiles, honorable Kalile has said, by the end of the financial year, we will be having those mobiles distributed in all the provinces. That is the commitment I'm making. If I failed in that commitment, really, I would even recuse myself from the position of Director General of the Department end of March next year, if I can't believe all that. And then, the appointment system which challenges itself, we're looking at various options, really, to make it easy. That's why we talk about admin cure, that's why we talk about the triple Q event, because there we are able to make the appointment. But in our front offices, it should be extremely impossible that we don't have adequate offices as we speak. So once you introduce an appointment system, you will really disadvantage a lot of people. It means if someone can't, let's just take a practical example, those who live in Gauteng. Currently, before you renew your license, you must make a booking. You go inside and make a booking now to renew your license, you're probably going to get a slot of May next day. Yes, that's the current situation. Because the many people are making those. So the appointment system in the driving, and the people are leaving the province in Gauteng to go to Mpumalanga and other areas to renew their driver's license. I've met so many managers actually that have done that to say, now I'm going to go, to Heidelberg or to ML or to do my driving license renewal because of the booking system. And also Department of Transport opted for that because of the numbers in Gauteng were quite huge. People are complaining that they were waiting for long tours to do their driving licenses. So those are some of the issues that, yes, we can introduce the appointment system, but it has all its own, advantages and disadvantages. So it means for someone who needs a passport now, there will be no immediate issues. I mean, Chair, every day, when I say every day, I get someone who says, I didn't realize my passport at the back. As of like this Friday, I was dealing with another CEO who was for one entity who was there to leave yesterday because they only realized in the morning that the passport had expired. So if we were to introduce an appointment system, a majority of people would suffer, because we are not able to have the people would point them to an appointment system. So we do need a mechanism. One of the things which I would want the committee to support us, we are thinking of introducing what we call a premium office where we are able to give 7 days service at a premium in Pretoria, as part of dealing with these people who forget their passports that they've expired. We have a huge number of people who are doing that, on a daily basis. Some of them is not because they are indigent, I guess it's either oversight on their part, but then the pressure on us to deliver on the same day is quite huge. So we are looking at other options, but with the traditional office appointment system, we do believe that it might give us problems. I think the comments that was made by Honorable Pastor around the issue of the budget we noted, and also Honorable Zito. Chair, Honorable Mwela, you're quite correct that the limitation of funding does create a problem for us, and this committee has on two occasions called the DG of National Treasure. Obviously, in most of the discussions that we brought here in the presentation, it was to look at the entire economic outlook of the country, the challenges that the country is facing, that is, there's no additional funding for the department, those were in the same boat, the competing priorities in the current defense ones, this police, minister, someone, health and education. So those competing priorities, they do create a problem. But what we are saying is that from its onset, Home Affairs has never been properly funded. That is our argument, that we do need a one-off redress of the funding of the Department of Home Affairs. if we are not able to do that, we need a different funding model where we are able to generate revenue. Because where we're sitting with huge data that we can actually monetize it and be able to generate revenue through, for example, the online verification system that everybody wants their hands on it to be able to verify their client and actually charge a very reasonable fee for that particular online. And we do believe that we can actually raise enough funding for the department to be able to fund its operation. And also the point you are making around taking services to people like that, I did indicate that the schools, we used to go there with the old split, which was 9-1-9. So obviously nobody, when we modernized, we then decommissioned the old split, obviously nobody wanted to get an ID book in those particular schools. Now the new project will start. It took longer than we thought, because again, Jefferson, you know, as an accounting officer, there's some of the bad limitations. You can take a decision and say, I'm deviating from this, I'm going to do contracting. But what AG then does, they come and say, but you do not get approval from this, I'll say that. But I'm saying I'm using my power to deviate. And then it comes back to this committee as a regular expenditure. So you have to tiptoe, you know, to ensure that, you know, you don't find yourself in a situation where, you know, your deviation is causing the irregular expenditure. So balancing between providing the services, but also not putting the department on its record in a very bad light, because then the auditors are going to come and explain the irregular expenditure. You know, nobody will remember that that money actually went to serving certain citizens because we had to deliver that particular service. So you now have to delay the issue of the mobile deployment because you have to follow the right process of procurement, you know, to connect them. Otherwise, if you deviate because you are rushing to those kids, you know, you left with the problem, but the citizens would have benefited, but the department gets a negative record. So those are some of the nuances that we need to consider when we're dealing with this particular issue. The office in health review, yes, it is a huge area, not an ideal situation, but in Bushbuck Bridge, we do have an office in Mala, which we opened about 2 years ago, where their services, I guess the point is that we need to look into whether, you know, all the equipment, because after 3 years, we need to do tech refresh. You know, with technology, that's one of the investments that we have to make on a regular basis, that we do tech refresh, change the scanners, change the PCs and so forth, to ensure that the office, you know, continues to run on a regular basis. And then the relationship with the unions, we have a good relationship. I mean, myself, I meet on a regular basis with both the unions who are in the Department of Home Affairs. My recent one was with the PSA, because they are also representing a huge chunk of employees. I meet on a almost regular basis with Nehao to discuss obvious issues of common interest. So that one we have done. But we'll continue to engage with them. And also, interestingly so, Chairperson, with this discontinuation of Saturday work, you know, on two occasions, leaders of the same union, there was called me to say, I need a passport agency, and my bed was stolen in the office opened on Saturday. So I said, well, tickets are coming on to roost. You know, so it's something really not that we have realized that when it affects them personally, that this thing is very important, but also the disadvantaged people in the Saturday, it's not your professional people. It's blue collar workers who earn on a ticket that they have to clocking system. When they leave the office to go and fix their stuff during the week, they don't get paid. You know, so if you then give them a Saturday, they're able to access the service. Actually, where I'm sitting, I want them to be able to operate fully on a Sunday, so that we are able to service the people of South Africa much better. Just to conclude on the issues raised by Honorable Chavane, I think most of the points that you have made around the obstacles that we're facing around the achievement of our money, that people know that the CETA issues we came here, we are working on that. And the issue of the pilot, I think the same way, Honorable, on the issue of focusing on rural areas to ensure that they receive services. When the triple tourism ban is concluded, definitely the rural areas will be prioritized. I mean, if you look at, we do have an office in a place like Omplan, but you know, in Siabuso, you have challenges in the, you know, Nongoma and other areas where you are able to have this bank. So we'll be able to redirect the relevant institution to say, let's use that access accessibility study to determine where we're supposed to locate these places. Because where I'm sitting in Chairperson, and I've said it to the committee before, 400 offices are not adequate for the population we're serving. We need over 6,000 offices of Home Affairs to be able to effectively access everybody. If it's not a traditional office, when I say office, I even now count the mobile staff, so they will serve a form of a new modern type of an office. Even the utilization of apps, they will serve as a new modern office, because sometimes we don't even talk about an office, we always think about, you know, your current traditional offices. The PFP must be a problem, as I said, we are aware of it. When it started, I think that's one of the projects to the committee, that some of the people who live as vagrants in the city, they go and do the queue in that office and then sell those particular stuff. The office manager has been intervening in that, because the problem, as I said in the last time, is a public space where people are queuing outside. It does give us a huge challenge because of where the office is located. But we'll continue to try and resolve that particular issue. I think you raised the issue relating to customizations. I've talked about it, that we are continuing obviously training. We do have just issues of people with wrong personalities sometimes. And then also long hours and stress does contribute, you know, to some of the problems that our officials face. And then the issues of economic management is what I have. We still have to deal with that issue, because initially the concept that we had was that we would create a facility at the Bombay for a refugee reception office where someone, when they arrive, you know, we process them and then give them the decision as quickly as possible. But the minister's view was that we should not take into our hands the responsibility of housing people. That's why, you know, I'm answering that question to her, but that I do not have any goal. But it must be the UNHCR that takes that responsibility. So we still have to stretch out that issue, how that the refugee reception center in Congo is going to look like. And then there are weaknesses, as you said, that the report has elevated some of the weaknesses. And I think the message that is shared across the house is that, yes, there are weaknesses, but some of the weaknesses one needs is funding, some of the weaknesses need leadership, some of the weaknesses need a little bit of flexibility with our legal framework. Because, Chairperson, I think we go to an extent of going to the market and procure for certain services. When we sometimes say that we actually get that service for half, you know, of the money that we sometimes pay, because of the manner in which we procure services. I mean, we've got a lot of innovators who come with ideas to us, ideas that are going to be very, you know, cheap. But it is because unsolicited proposals, they've got to follow a different model in order for us to get those services. But we'll continue, obviously, to resolve as much as possible the problems that are faced by the Department of Home Affairs in terms of the citizens, which is a very difficult problem, but we continue to ensure that we deal with it. I hope I've covered most of the questions, Chairperson. If not, then maybe some of the questions my colleagues would chip in, but I thought I would just address all of it. All of it.
I think we have covered it. I think what we are able to elevate, one is that as a committee we need to engage with Treasurer one more time around the issues of budget, because that will be very important. And the second is the issue of Twitter. We will come back, I think we must come back, because we need to take quite a bit of detail around the Twitter and the activities around Home Affairs. And thirdly, the issue of doing the rural areas. I think every pilot that we need to do going forward, we want to look at the rural area. So that's where majority of our people are. And the issue of Saturday, I think we must elevate the risk rest. I think you must give us a roadmap on how you want to conclude with unions on the issue of working on Saturday and Sunday. I don't see any reason why you can't work Saturday and Sunday, because you officials at the airport, they work almost in the same shift. They work all the days. So if we were to elevate that and start to make sure that this shift includes Saturday and Sunday, then you must start to engage with unions as earliest now. I think that will assist with the issue of the kids. With regards to the people who are being middle men in the queues, I think you must come back and tell us what you want to do about that. I don't know how that works. You are up to the task of dealing with the problems that you encounter on a daily basis. But we really, as the committee, from time to time, will be on your neck about how do we improve the services at the home affairs. That's where the case. And this report, like a lot of people said, we must improve it to involve, because now he's saying that Facebook kids are putting there was another one, so maybe you must improve the report to include all other things that are said on the Facebook. I can't do this. The doctor's handwriting. No, the issue of fair, the issue of training and employment, plus internships. But I think when we call the seat again, we need to discuss about this issue, how do we increase these trainings, internships. Maybe these people who are outside facilitating, we must train them to be internship certified. You know. I just don't understand how to be get the tech of managing to make the men choose. But other than that, we would like to thank you very much for respecting the Commission of Parliament. And we really don't take it like so very future. We represent the people by a multi-party committee. We, from time to time when we meet with people, we raise their frustration and their issues. So, it's our role to make sure that we do the job right. But the work we're doing, we're not taking it very much. We really respect the work that we do. I think you are excused for today. Members who are continuing with the meeting, thank you for your attention. And I take them as that. We can start with the meeting. We can find the move because we don't have time. We can start with the meeting of the 8th of October 2019. So, no, I did not give permission for members of the media to leave, but all this button. You think of the meeting of the 8th?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to inquire in terms of Resolution 7.1. It was a request for a written report on repeat offenders. Just to highlight the fact that we still haven't received that report from the meeting at the beginning of October.
Now, let's go. Let's read page by page. Let's start with page 1. What do you mean page by page? The meeting of the 8th of October 2019, page 1, page 2, page number 3. Page number 4, page number 5, page number 6, page number 7,
Yeah, 7.1, the second sentence.
it was agreed that the NECA would not discuss at an individual level, then the comma, and did not read the rest of the sentence.
Thank you. Any more? Move up for adoption.
Again, that none of our questions weren't answered at that meeting, and there was a commitment to answer them by the 28th of October. So we haven't received those responses either. So resolution 5.1.
Can we get the response? Why are we going to speak?
I have to make a follow up with the PC of Portugal and the Golden and this afternoon on the application. I have not received any from that.
Thank you. I think the Honourable Commissioner and Honourable
Chairperson, may I request that the Secretary attach a time frame so that you can assess us by when you can expect the responses?
Also for that on the same method of time frame. And I think the date was the 27th of October.
I thought you would also make suggestions in view of the fact that they are in default.
It may be different if there was an evidence that there was an attempt to remind them to give them force. So the 5.1 silence and the secretary says he will follow up on the matter. What you may say that you must attach in the manner of community. Secretary must give some frame to follow up exactly on the issue of the
Chair, I want to adjust the suggestion by my colleague that the letter must come from me. And if you listen to Honorable Nkosa speak about us, lawmakers. Now, if us, lawmakers, have been taken to our lives by this organization, what are they doing to the client, to the citizens out there? So I think we must write a serious letter to the manager. They must give reasons. And also perhaps, if possible, they must investigate a discipline against those responsible for reporting to us. Because what's the use of having them here? Listen to us, go back, we will come back, they're not coming back. So what's the use of asking here? And we are representing people out there. And again, if they are treating us as a legitimate body the way they are treating us, how are they treating the public? Thank you.
On 5.1, on the commitment to get sponsors, I just checked on the calendar, the 27th of October on the Sunday. So I'd like to believe that we're to get responses on the 28th of October. Can you please just note that and change the date back to the 28th of October? With those corrections, I'd like to move to the adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, we can, but be that as it may, there is still late. Still very late. It's responsible. Any more for adoption? Remote, any seconder? Hello, seconder?
Seconder?
Let's go to the chief engineer. Page one. Page two. Page 3. Page 4.
I was not present on the 29th, we are on page 1, and my colleagues are telling me that he submitted my apologies because I gave him my apologies.
Who was telling you that?
The Calabrini stands up in a non-profit organization.
Okay, is no check. Page 6. Any more?
About 7.4. It states here that the committee was in support of the extension of the VFS contract. So what transpired in that meeting is that we asked, is it going to be delivered on time, and the DG couldn't guarantee that. But I don't remember anywhere where we took a resolution to say that we support, or we say that the VFS contract must be renewed.
Is
So basically what I'm suggesting is that we take out 7.4 and make 7.5 7.4. Since this makes it sound like we took a resolution that they must go ahead with the VFS contract extension, which is not the case.
The number and the recollection of the issues. Those who are present, Honorable Chavani?
No, sir, we requested the, is the correct capturing of the how the meeting discussed to receive a report from the Department of the VFS. The challenge is that it might from the trigger committee. What are the implications should the committee, the DHS team be terminated in terms of how the previous committee is managed? We have taken that to this so not to appoint, but to allow the department to proceed with the contract. Secondly, we've taken a decision for the committee, you know, the department to look on other institutions that are contracted by the department for investigation in terms of the report. We've made a time frame on how they must run as a transitional until such time that they're going to enter into the PPE public partnership to look on that. So it's a reflection of our discussion in the meeting in the summer. What we can the purpose of affirming the report is to get the this is a three meeting. This is the check to satisfy members of the committee of the public on the processing of that position. And I think that the correct capture is on the subject.
Thank you. I think the background of the matter about the committee of the fifth parliament had problems with the VFS contract. And as a result, they then told the department not to proceed. Then the department was supposed to proceed on a month-to-month. But when the department approached the VFS wanted to withdraw because they said they had staff all over. This is the month-to-month, there will be certainty for them to then proceed. And the department decided to give them a two-year extension, which two-year extension is almost ending now. And what was reported by the department was that the chief director was responsible for that act because the decision was taken to have a triple P agreement. The decision which was taken in triple P agreement, but the 3 year contract term is ending very soon. So we have said to the department they must extend to allow the space of the triple P to kick in. Otherwise, these people are doing work that is related to what cabinet has already pronounced as part of our area of and issues of areas of priority, that is the e-visa finding related issues. And on those grounds that they must proceed to do this. But we don't say that strong, but what I warned about was the day this committee of parliament gets into who must be appointed, who must be done that and so on, it will get to be a problem for us having to do a proper oversight over the department. Because we will now be getting into issues that relate to tender. So for the period that they must do the security, they must extend the scope of this. So I think that is how we have captured it.
Thank you, Jeff. It's not really a matter of whether it was discussed or not that concerns me. What concerns me is that there's a stated as if there was a resolution we agreed.
So then it would incorrectly indicate that, so for example, I wouldn't have. And I'll give you an example. Here's the press release from the minister saying that they're going to make the deadline, that they're rushing to make the deadline. And are we going here and saying that we're saying that they should go ahead and renew the VFS contract? No, and we didn't take that resolution. So if you want to leave us in here, then you want to state my objection. I wasn't part of that resolution.
No. Just the one answer. We are just going to agree. But even in the afterthought, just say, in view of development or something, but we have agreed in the team. And I think we have agreed. But we can note that we are saying that, but we have agreed. And I'm very honest with you. But I see we have now an article which came after that agreement. And this is just one. I want you to open this matter. That's what you want to say in good faith, but you did agree. And now you say that development, I don't see that article, I may have to read it. But for that purpose of that meeting, we have agreed. If we need to reopen the match, let's also especially give me the email next week. Let's discuss it. But we can't, we consider that any flaws to just get matters that have arisen, wanting to put them on audio board agreed. We have agreed. Let's close it, there's everything agreed. But we can say we'll open the matter again. So as we look at what the article says and what the department is saying, and further briefing from the department given that article. Is that acceptable?
It's just that the thing is that I didn't agree to this. So if it's put here as a resolution that the committee made, then I want to say that I disagree with that. If the committee voted on it, it went through.
It's only now that you don't agree, but you agreed.
No, I didn't agree. I never agreed. I brought up the whole issue to say that it shouldn't happen. I even asked a parliamentary question in terms of how are we going to get the PPP in place? Why would I agree later that we want to... The point is it doesn't need to be here because we didn't take a physical resolution. So yes, we discussed it, but I'm saying just take it out because we didn't
I
just want to say that.
Let's leave it here, but we need to do that. We're going to open it. Because I know we have agreed and summarize it as such on schedule that we have agreed, but let's allow ourselves to discuss it further. You know the question?
I think, sir, I would like to agree with your approach. Because it would be wrong for Honorable Ross to say we did not vote for this. Yes, we did not vote, but here we are dealing with what was recorded in that particular case, not only in the telephone. Unless if he wants to say to us all other minutes that we have taken, all the resolutions of those meetings were rejected. So I'm saying for further discussion I agree, but for now let's agree on the discussion because it was all discussed.
Chair, I think I don't think it's correct to give your approach a bit technical. If you suggest that we need to reopen the discussion, when the committee has directed the department to proceed with it, and now if you come back, we reopen the matter, which all of us have discussed on, and the collective directive and summary is as reflected in it. Now, we come back to the department 3 weeks or 2 weeks. They've either been processing the issue and considering in line with the priority on how they presented it. I said, if the electronic report on the proceeding of that meeting, if there was an objection to the issue, the matter could be presented in the committee meeting and be objected and discussed. In the summary of the submission out of the members of the committee and the chairperson,
a directive is asking the chair's explanation to this meeting. I can't have an afterthought chair to come and raise a matter when the matter has been unless there are certain issues we are not privy to chair on the problems which are affecting the BSS and the department and the honorable role. Sufficient reporting, reason, consideration on the issues that are current, the priorities of government and how we move, we explain to the committee. I don't agree that this matter must be reopened on the basis of afterthought of afterthought. If there's an issue which I think it was not being dealt with in the meeting, so we can in the meeting. Let's adopt this as a thing. We'll think more in terms of the issues that are related, because we're not thinking of the issues that came after the meeting. But we have satisfied ourselves on the report of the previous committee, how the report has been presented, how we have engaged the discussion, and how we have resolved in this meeting.
Yes, sir, that's what I'm saying, we adopt, and I know it happens. But this is a matter is arising. We are free to get a living experience again. What's the problem? But yes, this is what we agreed upon. I have a clear connection. Any new projection? Adoption, honorable boss?
Okay, so I'm going to move to the adoption of the minutes.
Second?
Thank you.
Let us go to the minutes of the 12th of November. 12th of November, page 1, page 2, page 3. Any adoption?
So we move to the adoption of the minutes.
Let's move to the minutes of the 19th of November, I think. Any
resolution that needs to be added. What we said is that we need the actual investigation reports when they are completed to serve as a committee. We spoke about the different investigations, Fireblade and that, and then we said that all those reports, once they're completed, so the department said, you know, Fireblade is not completed, it's not completed. So one resolution we made is once they're completed, then they serve at the committee so that we can look at those investigation reports for VFX, Fireblade and VFX.
Yeah, I think you've had the collection of talks to the VFX. I accept that, so it's just that.
And we put that mainly before.
Can you get on record?
Yeah, but I was just saying in the Gupta citizenship report, but also in the two.
Thank you, Chair. To the best of my recollection, we asked for the VFX, Fireblade, and VOH investigations report once they were completed. the best of my recollection.
So what Honourable Majuba is raising is not before I try to defend and you're associated with the
The negative report was speaking about the residents, the citizenship of the
state. Yes, no. I think if you want to raise that matter, let's raise that matter on high people. But let us not sneak it into where we are not discussing about.
No, I didn't get
it. Yeah. General Roth.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to propose the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Any second?